Want more of the Josh Scanlon podcast?
Please. Please.
Here you go. The Josh Scanlon podcast starts right now. Yeah! Welcome to the Josh Scanlon podcast. This episode first appeared as a video on my YouTube channel at youtube.com/heritagewealthplanning. I hope you find it informative. Thanks. Welcome, my friends, to another edition of the Heritage Wealth Planning YouTube channel. Oh, man, I got exciting stuff to share with you here now. I love Vanguard. How I love Vanguard. Yes, indeed, I do. So I'm on their advisor email list. You can go to Vanguard. They got an advisor list and then one for investors, and I'm on both. And so the investor list, the emails that you get are different from what the advisors get. Man, they sent this one here today that's just absolutely 100% fantastic, and I've got to share it with you because it talks about taxes. And Vanguard, you're leading the way on tax-efficient investing without question. And it gets overlooked a lot by the investment management realm, the community, because they know investment taxes are hidden costs to managing a portfolio. And if they can hide that cost, like, oh, you got a 1099. Oh, don't look at us. It is because of you. And if they can hide that and they don't have to be explicit about it, or if they can just put it in all this diatribe of SEC prospectuses and semi-annual reports and statement of additional information, all that, a few and far people are going to know what exactly the tax consequence of active management is. And in Vanguard, they don't do that. John Bogle, you are the man of all men. If you're watching this video, man, if you could sign my YouTube video, because the guy's just a hero of me. All right, so I'm going to show you something. So think about it from the perspectives of someone who's about, let's think about retiring. You got three portfolios, $100,000 in each, okay? You got a Roth IRA, a traditional IRA, and you get a taxable account, a non-qualified account. So you got three portfolios. I'm making it as simple as pie. I get that. Three portfolios, Roth, traditional, and taxable account, $100,000 in each. Now, what will happen is a lot of people are going to make the horrendous mistake of saying, I'm a 50-50 investor. I'm going to put 50% stocks, 50% bonds in all three accounts. And that's the wrong answer. Do not do that, please. I'm going to show you why here in just a second, so keep watching. But remember, you have three accounts. Each account type has its own tax ramifications. So let's start with the traditional IRA first and foremost. No taxes whatsoever. You get a deduction of money going in, but again, we got $100,000. It's already been there, so we've already taken the deduction. No taxes whatsoever until you pull money out. Now, when you hit 70 and a half, you are going to be forced to start pulling money out. But until you start pulling money out, you don't pay any taxes whatsoever. Well, that's great. No. Not necessarily. What is the tax ramification for every $100 you pull out of that account? You're going to pay ordinary income tax on the first penny. Ordinary income tax is the worst tax you can possibly pay. Nothing else comes close. Ordinary income from a tax perspective is bad. It's bad. We want to avoid ordinary income tax to the extent that we can. So now there's some ways there's nothing to do about it. I mean, if you got an IRA, you pull money out, you're paying ordinary income. No getting around that. So just remember, ordinary income, IRA, ordinary income, IRA, ordinary income. Now we go to the Roth IRA. Now the difference between a Roth and traditional, the Roth IRA, you did not get that tax deduction to put money in. All right, so you put X amount of dollars in, that's still, however you receive that money, is still taxable to you as ordinary income from either employment, you know, you're working as labor, or you converted from a traditional IRA to a Roth. Either way, the money that went into the Roth is post-tax. But as that money grows, it's not only tax deferred like a traditional, but it comes out tax-free, all right? Roth IRAs come out tax-free. So you don't get the benefit on the front end, you get this benefit on the back end. And with a Roth IRA, there's no required distributions for you or your surviving spouse if you leave it to her or him. No RMDs, unlike a traditional. Once you hit 70 and a half, you got to start pulling money out. So a Roth IRA, less advantageous on the front end, huge advantages on the back. Traditional IRA, more advantageous on the front end, big tax problems on the back because it comes out as ordinary income. So the difference between a Roth and a traditional IRA cannot be different. The Roth doesn't tax you. Traditional IRA taxes the ordinary income. That's the biggest gap, is like Grand Canyon size gap there. Now, a taxable account has a couple things going on it. You get no tax deductions of money going in, nothing like that. So you have just like a Roth IRA, you got $100,000 of labor, you put $100,000 in a regular taxable account, you don't get a deduction like you would in a traditional IRA. But with a taxable account, a couple things happen. Capital gains and qualified dividends are taxed between 0 and 15, 18, depends on your tax bracket. I'm just going to say your regular ordinary Joe, a 22% tax bracket, married filing jointly, those are going to be taxed at 15%. Ordinary income is taxed at, well, if you're 22% tax bracket, ordinary income is taxed. I just looked out the window. Sorry about that, mail guy. Ordinary income is taxed at 22%. So inherently, immediately, right out of the gate, a taxable account, a non-qualified account, is taxed much lower than your OI, ordinary income, because it's taxed as qualified dividends, and it'll be taxed as long-term capital gains, which is could be actually even zero, my friends. It depends on where your tax bracket is. If you're in the 12% bracket, you're not paying anything as long as you maintain yourself in the 12% bracket. Don't want to get too deep in that, but just remember, we're trying to show you a scenario here. A taxable account. No income tax deduction, money going in. You pay tax on your dividends. Qualified dividends are taxed better than ordinary income. You pay tax on your long-term capital gain. Again, tax better, more favorable than ordinary income. The big one, though, is you got to pay income tax as ordinary income on your bonds and your CDs, any kind of interest income that you get. Interest income you receive is taxed as OI, ordinary income. So of the three tax brackets, Roth, which is zero, traditional IRA, which is OI, ordinary income, or taxable account, which is could be the combination of 0, 15% or ordinary income, you want to take advantage as much as you possibly can of that taxable account. Move the taxable account and move that, take advantage of it, because we do not want ordinary income in that taxable account. We do not want that. And I'm going to show you what I'm talking about here in just a second. So hang with me, because we're going to show you what I mean by all this. Roth tax-free, taxable account. Again, I'm going to tell you to focus on capital gains and qualified dividends. And then finally, ordinary income taxable that comes from a traditional IRA. So that's a favorable order of preference. Roth taxable IRA. Now, every situation is unique, but just generally speaking, if someone's approaching retirement, I'm looking at Roth, taxable account and IRA least. Okay, that's the least favorable because it's taxed as ordinary income. Now, secondly, with a taxable account, let's say I have it all in my name, $100,000 is in the name of Josh, and that grows to $200,000. And we'll just say it's all unrealized appreciation. I put $100,000 in, I bought a stock that pays no dividends, no interest. It grew to $200,000, and then I get squished by the proverbial bus. I'm dead. I leave that to my wife. I don't have it as joint tenants of rights or survivorship. Instead, what I have is a TOD beneficiary designation, a transfer on death beneficiary designation on my taxable account, similar to I have a POD on a bank account payable on death, or I have beneficiary designations on my life insurance and my IRAs and whatnot. So in this case, I just have my own name. Josh Scanlon is the owner. I have my spouse, Charlotte, as a transfer on death. She'll receive the property without having to go through probate, without having to go through my will at my death, because there's a TOD beneficiary designation on that. And just on a side note, while I am alive, I also have a durable power of attorney that she can use to access my money if she needs to, because I'm, I don't know, skiing in Himalayas or something like that, whatever. So we have POD, POAs, durable powers of attorney. We have TOD beneficiary designations, $100,000. It grows to $200,000. And then I get killed by Eli Manning driving down the street because he hates Patriots fans. I mean, apparently he does, because he's beaten us twice in the Super Bowl. So I'm dead. My wife inherits that $200,000 account. How much tax does she pay on it? That's right. Nothing. She pays no tax on that when she inherits it, because of what's called a step up in basis. All right. So she inherits that account, no taxes. The $100,000 in my Roth IRA that has grown to $200,000, she inherits that account, That's right. No taxes. No taxes. $100,000 in my Roth that grew to $200,000. Does she have to take distributions from it? No, that's right. Roth IRAs do not have required minimum distributions, even to a surviving spouse. On my traditional, my non-qualified account, does she have to take distributions from it? No, that's right. Exactly. No mandatory distributions on the non-qualified account either. My Roth IRA, on the other hand, it grew to $200,000. All right. So now we have a $200,000 Roth IRA and she hits 70 and a half. Does she have to take distributions of it? Yes. I knew you were going to say that. So I just said that for you because I knew you already had the answer. She has to take ordinary income from it as required minimum distributions. Or let's just say she needs the money. She's got to take income from it anyway, and she's going to pay ordinary income tax. There's no absolving her of the need to pay OI, ordinary income tax. And again, as I talked about many times, now she's no longer married filing jointly, so she doesn't have the $12,000 extra standard deduction that I was bringing to the table. And if we're over 65 years old, it's $13,300. So now immediately $13,300 is subject more to taxation because I'm dead than it was if we were still married and I was alive. So now she has to take distributions of her IRA, mandatory distributions, whether she wants to or not. She has to pull money out, tax those ordinary income to her, and she lost a standard deduction because I'm dead. All right, so what does it have to do with all this? Okay, so now we see how those three things are playing out, right? So again, 100,000 Roth, 100,000 traditional, 100,000 in a taxable account, non-qualified account. So Vanguard shows us this wonderful strategic model portfolios, global diversification, remarkably low cost, low return variability relative to benchmarks, potential tax efficiency. This is where it gets fun. Potential tax efficiency. Why? Now, right now, I'm starting with 100% equity and no fixed income. That means all stocks, no bonds. Watch this, my friends. This is your pre-tax returns. So after 5 years, it averaged 10.63% a year pre-tax. What matters to me, pre-tax or post-tax? Post-tax does. So after 5 years, I lost 62 basis points on a 10.63% return, which means I lost 0.62 divided by 10. I lost 6.2% of my returns, not of the entirety of my portfolio, but I lost 6.2% to taxes. Now, if this isn't, I can hear you. Well, this is an IRA. There is no tax. Oh, bear with me. We're not done. I got more to say on this. So how do they figure out the tax? Right here. Right there. Important after-tax information. Let's click on that guy so you can see what I'm talking about. There we go. Vanguard after-tax returns are calculated using the highest individual federal income tax rates in effect at the time of each distribution. They do not reflect state and local taxes. So if you're in New Jersey and you got to pay the Philadelphia wage tax or whatever it is, this doesn't reflect any of that. It only reflects federal and the highest federal tax burden at that. It might not be you. I mean, at the end of the day, the highest burden, you got to be making a pretty good amount of money. But your after-tax return depends on your individual tax situation, may differ from the figures presented here. Okay. Let's just read this because I think it's funny. If you own a fund or exchange traded shares in a tax-deferred account, this information does not apply because these accounts are not subject to current taxes. They're subject to ordinary income at distribution. After-tax returns of Vanguard funds reflect the reduced tax rates on ordinary income, qualified dividend income, and short-term, long-term capital gains that went into effect under the Bush tax cuts of 2003, and Obama and Boehner signed that nice piece of bipartisan legislation to keep it in effect in 2012. After-tax returns for non-Vanguard funds and ETFs are provided by Morningstar based on data provided the fund companies, blah, blah, blah. Past performance, whether before or after taxes, does not guarantee results. If a fund or ETF incurs a loss that generates a tax benefit, the post-liquidation after-tax return may exceed the funds or ETF's other return figures. After-tax returns are quarter-end adjusted for loads and fees. Okay, so at the end of the day, they're saying, look, we're just using the highest possible federal tax burden, and we're not including state taxes whatsoever. So now with Vanguard's equity, 100% equity portfolio, you've lost 6% of the total gains per year. And that, you know, that might seem pretty high. It is high relative to not losing anything, but it's pretty low, and I'll show you what I mean here in just a second when you see the difference here. So That's the tax you pay on this fund. All right. So now when I'm looking at this fund, I say, I want this fund because I'm getting the growth on it. I want this fund in my Roth IRA or in my taxable account. I do not want this fund in my traditional IRA. And here's why. Because if I have it in my Roth IRA, the entirety of the portfolio, this 10.63%, is going back to me. It's completely taxed. So I was able to scoop up that extra 6% and put it back here because I didn't pay any tax on it. And I'll never pay tax on it. Now, I also don't mind it being in my non-qualified account, my taxable account either, because while 6% of my total gain isn't chump change, it's not that big of a deal. And I'll show you what I'm talking about for another account here in a second. In the overall scheme of things, most of that is going to be taxed as qualified dividends, which is 0 to 15, depending on your tax bracket. Most of that is going to be taxed as long-term capital gain. Because it's all stock, there's no interest. There's no interest in this fund at all. It's all capital gain or long-term capital gain or qualified dividends, you know, the vast predominant amount of taxes. Now, is there could potentially be a non-qualified dividend? Sure. But we'll play this for what it is. The vast majority of the taxes I'm paying in there, the vast, if not all of it, are going to be all tax favorable because it's qualified dividend or long-term capital gain. You with me so far? So I want this 100% stock portfolio in one of two places, my Roth IRA or my non-qualified account. Now, remember, why do I want it in my non-qualified account as opposed to Roth? Six in one hand, half dozen the other, simply because at my death, my spouse or whoever's my heirs is going to inherit this. And if it grew 10% over 5 years, that means it basically doubled over the last 5 years. So she's going to inherit that with no taxes due to her because of step up in basis. All right. So we want my aggressive stuff in my traditional, we want my aggressive holdings to take advantage of the tax-free growth of the Roth IRA or to take advantage of the stocks being taxed much, much more favorably than bonds in my taxable account. And then on my taxable account, we can also get the step up in basis where she pays no income tax when she inherits the property. All right, so I know this important to understand is critical. I'm probably not even explaining it as well as I can, but just remember, our highly growth-oriented stuff, stocks, should not be in a traditional IRA. They should be in a Roth or a taxable account. Now, at the end of the day, I'd rather have a dividend-like account in a Roth because a dividend does pay qualified dividends, which does reduce your tax returns. I mean, so the reason why this is 10.63 gross and 10% net, 10.01 net, is because of dividends and long-term capital gains. So ideally, we want your Roth IRA to hold anything that pays income, be it capital gain distributions or qualified dividends. Or if it's like a real estate trust, you know, something that you're investing in for large dividends, we want that to be in your Roth because your Roth is 100% tax-free. And that means you're still going to get a pretty significant growth. We want your Roth to take advantage of the tax-free growth nature of the Roth IRA. And that means we want to funnel that in with as much income producing stocks as possible. So your Roth IRA should be your large cap stocks with dividends, or if there's any kind of active account that you have that has, you know, lots of trading costs with capital gains, we want those in your Roth IRA so you can capture the entirety of the gross return without paying taxes. And your non-Roth IRA, your non-IRA, your taxable account, your non-qualified account, we want your most aggressive stuff, like small caps, for instance, emerging market stuff, the stuff that can take advantage of the step up and gain and just boom, fly through the roof. Hopefully, small caps have done better than large caps historically. Will that continue? I don't know. But the growth on small caps typically is not weighed down by dividends. And generally speaking, if it's depending on what kind of account you have, like a tax efficient ETF, index fund, there won't be a lot of turnover. Remember, we talked about turnover in a previous episode on how to evaluate mutual funds. So the growth on your small caps can go through the roof, tax favorably. You're still probably going to get a few capital gains in there, but minimal. And so it's because it's small cap, there's not going to be a lot of dividends either, which again would mean it won't quite be 10.63, but because your large caps and your dividend producing stocks are in your Roth, your small caps, your stuff that doesn't pay a dividend, your emerging markets, the stuff that can take off like a bat out of you know where and hopefully swing for home runs, when that fund just keeps growing and growing and growing, and at your death, no taxes due whatsoever to your heirs. Now, if you have to take the money out, you can do it in a very tax efficient way. You can do it called FIFO, first in, first out, which basically means you're getting your bases back. Now, I'm not going to dive into that too much here, but you can do it in a number of ways to reduce the long-term capital gain when you are deciding to take the money out. For right now, though, at the end of the day, we're assuming you're just going to let that puppy sit there. You want your most aggressive, least income producing funds in your taxable account. So that way you don't have to pay, get a huge 1099 each and every year, which is for taxes, trading costs, capital gains, interest from dividends or dividends. And then if there's any bonds, heaven forbid, don't have any bonds in there. So we want your taxable account to be aggressive, low dividends, if any, low capital gains, if any. We want your Roth IRA to be aggressive, but more of the blue chip stuff, more dividends, more capital gains. If that's where you're going to have some taxable active management accounts where they're, you know, going back and in and trying to beat the market, we want that in your Roth. If you're going to have like a real estate investment trust or something like that, we want that in your Roth that shields a lot of dividends. All right. So Roth IRA and your taxable account. Now, let me show you something where your traditional IRA should be. Let's go over here to 100% fixed income. Well, let me do that. Yeah. Watch this. You want to be shocked? Look at that. So 5 year pre-tax in a bond fund, and the bond fund is the total bond index and the international bond index. 2.1%, my friends, is a gross return before tax. After tax is 1.07. So if we had this fund in a non-qualified account, we're going to lose 50% of our returns to Uncle Sam in taxes alone. 50%. All right, because all that is taxes, ordinary income. So if we have stocks in a traditional IRA and bonds in a non-qualified account, the stocks in the traditional IRA are going to come out taxes, ordinary income. On top of that, we're paying ordinary income tax on the bond interest we're getting on this non-qualified account. You're losing twice, because whatever is in your IRA is coming out as ordinary income no matter what. Whatever the growth of your stocks are going to do, they're going to grow to 200, 300, 500,000. Whenever you start having to pull money out of there, it's coming out as OI. But if you have a non-qualified account, a bond portfolio, that is also coming out as OI, because you're losing 50 cents on the dollar when it comes to taxes, maybe 40 cents on the dollar, whatever your circumstance is. But don't forget, this doesn't even include state tax. In Georgia, we've got 6% state tax. So you're losing huge amounts of growth of returns when you factor in the taxes. I cannot stress this enough. You have a 2% gross return net of taxes, and we're not including state taxes, 1%. That means you lost half of your returns to taxes, my friends. Now, if this were in an IRA and you have to take it out as ordinary income anyway, well, guess what? You're already having to do that anyway. It's coming out as ordinary income. So don't turn tax favorable holdings, stocks, into tax disadvantage holdings, ordinary income. And that's why you should have your portfolio, if you're $150,000 in bonds and $150,000 in stocks across three accounts, at least $100,000 the $100,000 in your traditional IRA should be in bonds, because that is your income that is already going to cause you taxes as ordinary income outside of the IRA. When it's inside the IRA, you're duplicating the number of ordinary income tax. You're paying ordinary income here for your traditional IRA, and whatever's outside the IRA, you're paying ordinary income there. We don't want you to have two taxes of ordinary income, because you're going to lose huge amounts of money in that non-qualified account. We don't want that. We want you to only have one area of ordinary income, which is your traditional IRA. No getting around it. Your traditional IRA is going to be OI. But let's not then turn around and make the huge mistake of putting a taxable tax-favored account, like a non-qualified account, and also making that ordinary income. We do not want that. So in this scenario, what I would do is I'd have my bonds, my 100% bonds in my traditional IRA. All right, so that's $100,000 gone. I got $50,000 left. I'd move $50,000, the remaining $50,000 of my bonds I put to my Roth, because a Roth does not have any taxes at all. And then I put another $50,000 in my more dividend and things like that oriented accounts in my Roth IRA too. So I have $100,000 in my traditional IRA, which is 100% bonds, $100,000 in my Roth IRA, which is say 50-50, 50,000 stocks, 50,000 bonds. Now I got $100,000 in my non-qualified account, my more aggressive account, in equities. And that's, man, it is a wonderful portfolio. You're still 50-50. You're still in the overall scheme of things, 100%. I mean, on your $300,000 portfolio, $150,000 in bonds, $150,000 in stocks. Absolutely. You're still 50-50 as a moderate investor. But the way you tweaked your portfolio will save you big. That means this will be yours right there, not that. This will be yours, not that. And we want you to look at after-tax returns. I cannot stress enough the difference between the after-tax returns on bonds and on stocks. I can't. You need to have your tax situation adhered to and looked at and analyzed and say, am I getting big 1099s? Oh, here's something else. You say, oh, I have tax-exempt interest. Oh, for the love of me. No tax-exempt interest. No. Tax-exempt interest is part of your MAGI, your modified adjusted gross income, which means it'll be subject to Medicare Part B and Part D, premium increases, as well as more make your Social Security more taxable. On top of that, tax-exempt interest doesn't yield the same as taxable interest. So essentially what you're doing there, you're saying, because I'm worried about the tax man, I'm willing to take a lower yield because a lower yield gives me no taxes. No. We don't want that. And that's what people do all the time. They make the mistake of turning what should be a much more favorable tax position in a non-qualified account and making that tax-exempt interest, which inherently reduces their returns. It does because, yes, they're not paying tax on it, but they're not paying tax a whole lot less return. We don't want tax-exempt interest. We don't. We want your bonds to be all corporate bonds and government bonds because it pays more because they're taxable. But we want those bonds inside your IRA so we don't have double dipping on ordinary income tax. No, siree, Bob. And yes, tax-exempt interest is not subject to taxation. I get that. It is subject to modified adjusted gross income. And on top of that, you're reducing your return because you're willing to take a less interest for tax-free when we don't have to do that in the least. If we just locate our assets the way they should be, and this is a great model. So I'm a huge fan of Vanguard. Again, as you can tell, I love the stuff they produce. You just can't go wrong. But you can go wrong if you're not paying attention to taxes. Pay attention to taxes. Look at your 1040 lines A. I mean, 8A and B, 9A and B, and 13. 8, 9, 13. That will tell you what your 1099, what you had on a 1099. Look at your, if you have a 1099, look at where from where is the money coming from that's going to lines 8, 9, and 13. That's a problem. And if you have, I think it's 8B, that's tax-exempt interest. No, we don't want that. All right. Hope this helps, guys. I know it's kind of long-winded, but I can talk about Vanguard stuff all day long. I love it. You should too. If you have questions, thoughts, or concerns, put them in the comments down below, please. Thumbs up. Always helpful to me to get the word out there about the Heritage Wealth Planning YouTube channel. Don't forget to subscribe and don't forget to hit the notification bell to be notified of future content. Go to heritagewealthplanning.com. You can see all the other stuff I have on there, podcasts, blog posts, the whole thing. And if you have any specific questions for me, just let me know. Josh@heritagewealthplanning.com is the email. And I'll see you next time on the Heritage Wealth Planning YouTube channel. Thanks, guys.